I'm Alexander Payne. I co-wrote and directed the film.
I'm Rolf Kent, and I wrote the music for the film.
And this is our third collaboration together, our previous two being Citizen Ruth and Election. One thing I liked about our process in this particular film is we've always taken a very traditional approach to score, which is deciding upon a basic theme or motif for each character or perhaps a section of the film and then developing it as need be. But in this one, the number of themes that kept developing as we were working surprised me. And so by the time we were at a good point in our process, there were maybe four or five very useful themes to which we could turn, depending not so much on even kind of dogmatic thinking, but how we felt, what could go here. Usually they are kind of established in the beginning, one or two or three themes, but this one they kind of kept popping up somehow.
Yeah, but also it was a longer writing period. It was at least 6 weeks before we started feeling we were on solid ground, and that's partly just because we didn't know what the film was, or at least I didn't. I was very much searching for a way in, and I looked at different sequences and different parts of the film, and tried out different ideas. And then from that point onwards, once we did start getting onto solid ground, still the process was such that it was very much an evolving thing. The story takes significant turns. I mean, the opening is very much about Schmidt and his wife and his family, but then it turns into, you know, a very different cast of characters towards the end. And consequently, you know, I would tend to write in blocks. I tend to sort of concentrate on certain areas, and you find common threads in the music for those blocks. And then you get to a section with the character Randall and his family, and suddenly nothing that applied before applies here. So that's one of the reasons I think different themes popped up at different stages throughout the process, rather than being all established at the very beginning.
This was a harder, more delicate tone, I think, than the previous two.
Yeah, very much so. And a more elusive genre. I mean, it was...
It's not just a comedy, say.
Exactly. Can you think of how you'd describe the emotional tone, especially in sort of some of the sadder
If I
sequences?
Could describe it, I wouldn't have had to make a film.
Exactly. Listen to the music. You know what the emotional tone is. But it took a lot longer to work out how to do that. And partly that was my own prejudices about what I expected the film to be rather than what the film actually was. And sometimes to learn that, you just have to put the wrong things up against it, thinking they're right, and just realize, yeah, that's wrong, and let's try again.
Often what happens is that I'd like things to be kind of dreary at first and depressing, and then Rolf comes in and has a more merry attitude toward the proceedings than I do, and it gives the audience more permission to laugh. But I like our work best when the more seriously you play something, the funnier it gets. Like I'm thinking in this one of when he discovers that he's been made a cuckold by his now deceased wife, and that Russian music kicks in as he's throwing away her belongings and confronting Ray. It's a very Russian, very kind of Sturm und Drang, big, very serious piece, but it's really hilarious because of that. It hits this level of very dramatic but deadpan something or other.
Yeah, it has a lot of momentum to it as well. It's Sturm und Drang, but it's also, yes, the unstoppable fury of Schmidt.
I just think it's a funny choice to have gone for kind of a Russian heaviness there as opposed to any other.
Well, but it's also, you know, the unstoppability is sort of ironic in that he's, you know, this old guy who's eminently stoppable, and nothing he's going to do is going to be that bad. But you make it seem like the world is going to know his thunder. Is there a sequence which is a favorite of yours in the film?
Musically?
Yeah.
I love the Russian one when he discovers his wife has been unfaithful. I always look forward to that. And I love the two funny cues in Denver. One when he's brushing his teeth,
right,
and falls into the, just before he falls into the waterbed, which is reprised in the end titles. I think that's an exquisite cue. And the one before it too, when he's having dinner with those people around the round table. That's a funny one. They're related, those two cues. And I really love, it's also one of my favorite sections of the movie too, but when the final drive back to Omaha, when he talks about how awful his life is, the last letter to Ndugu,
right,
which combines two of the main themes. I think that's a really good cue.
Because that particular piece does go through some changes. I mean, certainly when he when he goes to that monument, the bridge to the pioneers, the music warms up significantly. Mm-hmm. It sort of gives it a bit of heart.
It warms up a little bit, but oddly, it doesn't necessarily warm up the film. And even when we get back to Omaha, the comes back in on the violins. Again, that's it's re-anchoring us. It's sweet and emotional for a moment, but I don't get any. I don't think the film is warming up.
Right.
And then, as he's coming up the stairs of his house and walking through his bedroom, for a while, you removed everything but the harp, and that isolation of the harp brings me back into his isolation. Chords which come in after that solo harp are chords which are very murky and filled with dread, like dread of his life now that he's back in Omaha. I think it's a really great cue.
Oh, well, thanks very much. That harp is, you know, an ongoing theme throughout the film. The fact of his isolation, the fact of his sort of loneliness, and I suppose it really kicks in, well, at the funeral, at the beginning.
I also like your cue when he's talking about what he wanted his life to be, and we kept that montage of yearbook pictures and the stock chart and Fortune magazine. It's very funny there. And I also like very much your cue of his... It's two things. It began as his return to his university, and then we used it, found later that it worked as Genie's...
Right.
For Genie's cue...
Yes, it was originally written for him, but revisiting his old college.
Well, then it ceased being exclusively the university cue or Genie's cue, but it then became the cue of memory.
Rosy nostalgia.
Yeah, rosy nostalgia.
Yeah.
And that also is reprised in the end titles.
Alexander has an insight into the mechanics of music and the mechanics of music against film, and has a great impact on me in that he gets me to simplify things. And About Schmidt is a very good example of that. I mean, a lot of the music is very simple. It's very... there's nothing complicated to listen to. And that's a lot of it is testament to Alexander. And it's the hardest thing to do as an artist in any form. Simplicity seems to me the hardest thing to achieve. And... And anyone who helps drive me there and lead me there is very welcome.
And the reason I like working with Rolf over and over again is I'm a big fan of melodic film scores. I personally like melody. I don't want just sheets of mood being laying over the film, I want... I like things I can hum later. I like the Upper Carmen because it's got like 7 tunes that I can hum later. I like melody, and Rolf has a real gift with melody.
It's such a great tool in film as well, because once a melody's been established, once an audience knows, wow, that's the tune for the film, then you play 3 notes from it, and everyone knows that's a hint of something, and something that they've now learned to associate with that tune. And it's a great way of connecting different elements through a narrative. Very much a discovery for me on this film was that there's almost a neutrality to the emotion, which is accepted as conveying emotion. I mean, I remember the cue for when Schmidt's wife dies, and the whole sort of going to the funeral parlor sequence, and being reunited with his daughter after that. It was so easy to make that a big emotional thing, but your direction to me was that it was not about sadness; it was about the numbness of bereavement, just the sheer dazedness of what happens, which was a great direction, because thereafter it just threw me into a certain way of thinking about it, which has emotional qualities to it, but it's essentially about, as you say, you know, about numbness, about...
Yeah, except you went for the emotion, and I fought it at first, and then I liked it, when his daughter gets off the airplane.
Well, yeah, and I'm very pleased that worked that way it did. But that's like a tiny moment in the thing. Mm-hmm. And there is a definite sort of soulful quality to almost taking a step back from the emotion and just letting it play out.
You can say meditative or thoughtful, but even as mix in a certain degree of clinical outlook toward the emotional proceedings.
Mm. It's certainly not a word that I embrace.
Okay.
But
it's not about looking without compassion. You can be clinical and still compassionate, but you're not getting yourself completely caught up in it.
Right.
Because I think there's a certain quality of the film which is observational.
Right.
And maybe the music remains not coldly distanced, but very distanced in a, still a very interested way, respectful way.
Both I and Alexander respond to ideas from left field. And since we had penciled in this idea of having Chinese instruments in the scenes in Denver, now I know the sound isn't a Chinese sound, it's a Japanese sound. However, it comes from as far out of left field as the Chinese approach. So I just thought it was an interesting and funny sound.
It's funny.
And then, you know, put into a context of a piece of music with you know, driven by tuba and contrabassoon, which has no obvious reason to all live together. I thought it would be an interesting and eclectic mixture of sounds. There was a kind of synchronicity, if you will, about how the area occurred, but Alexander mentioned it, and by coincidence I've been experimenting with Erhu sounds in recent history. Mm-hmm. And so when Alexander mentioned it, it actually sort of paved the way for the whole sort of Chinese development of certain aspects of the score. I mean, they're hardly Chinese. It's not really Chinese music. It's just sort of odd music imbued with various Asian, Far Eastern elements.
Well, I had thought of Erhu originally because it's kind of, it's sad. You know, all Chinese movies are sad, and they so often use the Erhu in it, and it's so listenable and interesting, but sad.
Mm-hmm.
But not entirely sad, somehow. And that's why I thought it might work for this film.
Well, good choice.
Thank you, Rolf. Good choice.
All right, dude.